From GPB News, this is On Second Thought. I'm Adam Ragusea in today for Celeste Headley. On the show, we have a special dedication to mothers and to mama's boys.
So you had me come out here under false pretenses?
You wouldn't come here any other way. You haven't seen me in a year. It's why I went to Army to win you back. You have to forgive me.
It's not about forgiving you, although I don't. You need to grow up, Buster, because I can't take care of you anymore.
The son's voice that you just heard belongs to actor Tony Hale. He will join us in a moment to talk about his old role as Buster Bluth on Arrested Development and his current role as a White House aide on Veep. They are surprisingly similar roles. That's coming up this hour, but first, let's get some adorable business out of the way. Primatologist Franz DeWall was our guest on yesterday's show. He talked to us about why animals are so much smarter than we give them credit for.
Language and reading and writing and technology, and we are very strong in that. And so we have tried to judge animals on those terms, and that works okay with, let's say, a chimpanzee who is very similar to us and has very similar skills. But there are species, you know, like, why would we make that comparison? Is that really interesting to know, are you smarter than an octopus? Well, in your environment, with what you daily do, you are obviously very smart. But in the octopus's environment, who knows how you would be faring? We don't know.
Yeah, man, I sure can't change color. We wanted to know the thoughts about your animals in your life. How intelligent are they? Here are your first thoughts. Edward Austin Hall tweets, "My smallest cat, Sebastian, rules the roost over one older female and one larger male. I keep all my computers locked away from the cats, lest they engage in the behavior that I'm sure that Blofeld's white kitty, also known as True Head of Spectre from the James Bond series, did whenever off camera. You know, destabilizing currencies, arming both sides in global skirmishes, extorting politicians of lesser intellect, yada yada." Also, Robert Grizzle tweeted us a picture of a cutie named Bella, his dog. He says, "She helped me earn my BA in history and helped me write a lot of papers." In contrast, Allison Saunders also sent us a photo of her dog. She says, "Mud isn't that smart, but he sure is cute." Well, with a name like Mud, what else would you expect? We agree, and we always want to welcome your pictures of your pets. We're on Twitter at OST Talk, or you can post to facebook.com/onsecondthoughtradio, and we might feature your comments on the show. Now, actor Tony Hale first rose to fame as the ultimate mother's boy, Buster Bluth, on what I would consider to be the best American comedy ever on television, Arrested Development.
"I never want to look at Mom again."
"What happened?"
"I can't really talk. She might be listening in. Do you know she tried to set up my girlfriend with a man? I'm a man."
Now Tony Hale stars in the HBO series Veep, and in a way, his character there is also a mama's boy. He is the long-suffering personal assistant to President Selina Meyer, played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
"I see you. You stay away from my face."
"I hear you. But this is a family recipe from my aunts in Savannah, and they swear by it for skin problems and migraines. Mm-hmm. Chickpea paste, Tabasco with just a dash."
"All you're doing right now is making me hungry."
"Right."
That's from the recent premiere of Veep Season 5. In real life, Tony Hale isn't actually from Savannah or even from Georgia for that matter, but he spends a lot of time here because his parents live in Macon and he pays frequent visits. Tony Hale now joins us on the line from Los Angeles. Hi, Tony.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. I'm struck by how your two most famous characters are just very, very similar personas. They are naive. They are easily manipulated. They're a little bit dopey. And I suppose what I really want you to just do now is, like, behave so I can know whether or not any of that comes from who you really are.
Oh, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I know there's definitely a lot of similarities in the two, but the way I look at it is Gary, who I play on Veep, I think he would probably take care of Buster. Buster needs a Gary in his life.
Yes, Gary is competent.
Gary's competent, and Buster can barely get out of the house.
Right. As we mentioned, you didn't grow up in Middle Georgia. You grew up in Tallahassee, right?
Yeah, I grew up in Tallahassee. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the most culturally southern of Florida cities, I would argue. Do your southern roots inform your character?
Well, I went to school in Birmingham, Alabama. And my character on Veep, Gary, is from Birmingham, Alabama. So that was something I added when we were shooting. I was like, I'm going to make him from Birmingham.
Certainly, but is he a personality that you encountered in this part of the country?
No, I think it was just kind of an homage to just my southern roots. But I'm trying to think. I mean, I'm sure there's glimmers of him everywhere because I've lived in New York for many years. And you know, he's a hodgepodge of a lot.
Well, where did he come from? I mean, he's such a particular persona. Where did you assemble him from?
Ooh, I don't know. I mean, I think I've been asked that question with Buster and Gary a lot, and it scares me how naturally they came to me. So I don't know what that says about me. But I will say, like, he's a guy who has been with Selina Meyer, who's played by Julia, for probably over 15 years, and
right. He's
you know, probably a kid who never really had much of an identity. So he hooked on to somebody who had a really strong personality, and then her identity became his identity, and he's very content with that. He's not a guy who evolves. He's what's called a body man, and where they carry around a bag and they have whatever their representative needs. In my case, it's Selina Meyer. And you know, most people, I met a guy who did that in DC years ago, and he did it in his 20s, and then you get burnt out and you move on to other things. Mm-hmm. My character has stayed into his 40s and doesn't know any life outside of Selina Meyer and doesn't want to know any life outside of Selina Meyer. He's very content being right by her side.
Now, President Meyer is played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You two had actually worked together back on Arrested Development. She guest starred on the series in season one as a lawyer. Let's listen to a scene where she is interrogating Buster about his father's allegedly illegal business activity.
Oh, my God. You are not a big shot, Gary. You're a middle-aged man who sanitizes my tweezers. God.
You're wrong.
Excuse me?
When's Catherine's birthday?
June 8th.
9th. Which senator's daughter's in rehab?
You're out of line, Missy.
Gildray, what are you wearing tomorrow?
I don't know.
I do. I'm your calendar. I'm your Google. I'm your Wilson the volleyball.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not.
I have broken my body for you.
Now, as I'm sure our listeners were smart enough to infer, that was the wrong clip. That was actually from Veep. However, man, you and Julia Louis-Dreyfus have phenomenal chemistry. What's it like working with her?
Well, what's funny is, well, it's amazing to work with her, but when we were, we've been asked about working on Arrested Development together because she played the blind lawyer and I was Buster, and we were both asked at separate times, did we have scenes together on Arrested? And both of us were like, nope.
And then you forgot about that one.
Someone sent us each a screenshot of us sitting across from each other having a scene. So clearly it didn't make much of an impact on either one of our lives.
It made a huge impact on us in the audience, I can tell you.
Well, that's good.
So much so that we pulled the wrong clip.
Perfect. See, it's happening all over the place.
Exactly.
No, but she's pretty fantastic. She's, you know, she's what's called number one on the call sheet, where the lead on the show is the first person listed on the call sheet, and whoever that person is really sets the tone for the show. And sometimes, unfortunately, that person is very arrogant and entitled, and it sets a real tense environment. Everybody's kind of walking on eggshells. Or you have someone like Julia, who's incredibly kind and creative, and she's a team player, and everybody kind of throws ideas in, and it really helps the kind of creative energy and just the whole show. And the other side, that tension just sucks creative energy out of a room. So we're very grateful for the environment we have.
Yeah, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, another actor who seems to be the polar opposite from the character she so often plays, which is she's kind of a professional jerk on television.
Yes,
I would say that both of these series that we've been talking about, Arrested Development and Veep, kind of epitomize the contemporary single camera comedy style, almost mockumentary. That's a term that gets thrown around a lot, single camera show. For newbies, how would you define a single camera show? How does the number of cameras you're using on set really affect the tenor of the program?
Yeah, I mean, probably the easiest way to look at it is when you hear something like multicam. I apologize if there's a beeping in the back. I think my
fire.
Okay, good. I think my fire alarm's battery.
I mean, if your house is on fire, that's probably something that you should address.
What if it was, and I was like, nope, public radar's more important.
Well, you've got 3 minutes left, so only so much damage can occur.
But I think the really quick difference is there's something called multicam, which is like a typical, like a Big Bang Theory where it's on a set and a studio audience. And then single camera is kind of shot like a film. And our comedy, even though it's called single camera and it's shot like a film, there's typically two or three cameras on set with comedy so you can get the reactions back and forth if you improv, so you're not missing any kind of, you know, if you're shooting one side, then you could also get the other side.
But for some reason, this style of shooting seems to be associated with smarter, more intellectual comedy. Is there any causal relationship there, or is it purely correlative?
I would say probably a part of that is with single camera, you can get a lot more subtlety, and the jokes can be more subtle. It can, for lack of a better word, it can kind of be smaller, so it doesn't have to be so broad. And I think with that kind of smaller things, the subtle things you can cap, you can maybe make it more dense. It doesn't have to be so in your face. So maybe that's why.
Right, yeah. I suppose if you're acting on a set for a multi-camera sitcom or something, it's more like being on the stage. It's more like theater, so you're acting bigger.
Exactly. And I think it's just the jokes are a little, can potentially be more more set up or more obvious, whereas with single camera, like with our show, sometimes the joke is like maybe it's a wide shot and the joke is landing, someone saying it, but you just see their back, but it's very subtle. So you can kind of catch things like that, and maybe people label that as smarter.
We're talking to Tony Hale, actor from Veep and Arrested Development and many other things. Brilliant, brilliant guy. Love his characters. Tony, you get back to Macon to visit your folks pretty often. What's your impression of the region?
Well, my brother also lives in Atlanta.
Oh, okay.
And so I love Georgia. I love coming down south. And my wife is also from Alabama. And we met in New York, but she's from Alabama. And then I go down to Florida. So I get my full southern trip. But I love coming down. Great restaurants. I don't know. It's just nice. So this L.A. is, we love living in L.A., but it's a different vibe. So it's nice to get down south and kind of chill out.
And you've only recently been shooting the show in L.A., Veep in L.A. You had shot in Baltimore for the first few seasons, right?
Yeah, we shot in Baltimore for 4 seasons, and I really, really enjoyed Baltimore, but it was challenging because we shot for about 4 or 5 months, and it was really tough to be away from family. And then this year, they brought us back to Los Angeles, so it's great. My daughter's 10, so it's nice just to be back home and shoot at the same time.
I bet. So what's in the future for Tony Hale? Is there going to be a Veep season 6?
Yeah, they just picked us up for another season, which is great. So that means the mortgage will be paid another year, which is always a plus. But right now we finished shooting in March and then just kind of doing little gigs here and there and kind of working on some things. But, you know, it's nice to be home and see what happens next.
Yeah, in 20 seconds, what's a character that you want to play with in the rest of your career who would be very, very different from Gary or Buster Bluth?
Oh, man, in 20 seconds?
Sorry.
That's all right. No, my simple answer is just like, look, I'm so happy for a gig, so whatever comes, I'm pretty content.
All right. Atlanta's burgeoning film industry noted that.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I'm telling you, that place booming with
sure
film
is.
Stuff.
Absolutely is. All right, Tony Hale, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks. You guys have a great weekend.
Youth reporters at Vox Teen Communications in Atlanta are turning their attention to the problem of relationship violence. The United Nations reports that children who grow up in abusive households are more likely to become perpetrators or victims of domestic violence later in life. And many types of abuse aren't physical. One common form of psychological abuse is known as gaslighting. Nia Simone Ray of Vox Teen Communications reports on gaslighting and how it can delay a victim's decision to seek help.
18-year-old Tylenza Hall is only weeks away from giving birth. The Atlanta Technical College student says she's excited about being a mother. It's her first child, a boy, who she has already named Tristan. But she's raising him without the baby's father.
He loved me, but he don't. Because the way he treat me, he say mean things to me that hurt my feelings. And it's like when I bring it back up to him, he get amnesia.
What seemed to be a loving relationship at first gradually worsened as her boyfriend became verbally abusive. She recalls confronting him, but those conversations led to a dead end.
You said it and you hurt me, and now that I'm bringing it back up to you, you don't know what I'm talking about.
Unable to get through to her partner, she was left questioning whether she was the problem of the relationship rather than her boyfriend. What Tylenza Hall went through is called gaslighting. Because the phrases most associated with gaslighting are so commonly used in everyday conversation, friends and family can sometimes unknowingly perpetuate abuse outside of the dating relationship.
You're too sensitive.
You know you have trouble remembering things correctly.
You're always making something out of nothing.
You can't even remember what you had for breakfast this morning. How can you even trust your own memory?
According to the National Domestic Violence Hotline, gaslighting is a seemingly harmless yet rather common emotional abuse tactic. The term comes from the 1944 film Gaslight. The film features an emotionally abusive husband who manipulates his wife into questioning her own sanity for his personal gain. This dangerous tactic is primarily used by abusers in relationships.
And you thought I was being cruel to you. Keeping people away
not
from
cruel.
Making you a prisoner.
Oh, you're the kindest man in the world.
Whatever form gaslighting takes, its outcome is often the same. Isolate the victim and prolong the abuse. Margaret Lisi serves on the board for the Atlanta-based Partnership Against Domestic Violence. I caught up with her at this year's PADV Teen Summit, where teens from all over the metro Atlanta area gathered to learn about teen dating violence.
When I started dating, I dated guys who were abusive. And I just was, first of all, I was grateful for the attention. I was grateful to be validated, to be attracted enough to be dated by good-looking guys who are popular, and that they treated me badly was not unusual because that's the way my family treated me.
This is the type of story Macon-based attorney Tomika Daniel hears about on a regular basis. Daniel says that she handles domestic violence cases and that she often hears how complaints of abuse fall on deaf ears.
I just shared one of those stories where the mother was finally approached about the abuse that was going on with her daughter, and she says, oh, well, it's not that bad. It wasn't that bad. You know, again, it's kind of minimizing what the abused person feels and what they're going through, and once that abused person gets enough of that, they're going to start to believe it and say, well, gosh, maybe it really didn't happen. Maybe it wasn't as bad as I thought it was.
Daniel says even if they're not sure about abuse claims, adults can play a critical role in breaking the cycle of violence among teens.
One of the things that I try to tell the advocates is don't allow your own judgments to determine that there's no violence there, that there's no domestic violence. I always say let's take it to the judge and allow the judge to make the determination. That way, if we go before a judge and a judge says, well, there's no violence here, and then he kills her, they're going to look back at the judge's decision to find out how he made his decision. They're not going to look back at me and say, well, you didn't believe her enough to even take the case to court.
She says that speaking up about abuse is a matter of what's right and wrong.
They won't be legally responsible in that sense. Morally, they're going to feel really bad, but there is no legal responsibility against them, no.
But advocates say we should not wait until court to show support for victims of abuse. When I spoke earlier with Tylenza Hall, the pregnant 18-year-old from Atlanta, she told us about how her boyfriend abused her and then completely denied it. If it had not been for the support from her family and friends, she says that she might have never opened her eyes.
I used to think everything was my fault because of the things that he was doing. Until I actually just was like, now I know it's not me, it's you. My friends don't like him, my family don't like him, and it's like I'm beginning to not like him as well.
As she reflects on the abusive relationship, Hall is focused on the future. As her journey begins, Hall has this advice to those on a similar path.
If you feel like you need to talk to yourself, talk to yourself. If you feel like you want to talk to somebody else, talk to somebody else. Like, if you want to talk to your cat, talk to your cat. I mean, people or something is always there to actually listen.
For Vox Teen Investigates, I'm Nia Simone Ray in Atlanta.
Nia Simone Ray worked on that great story under the mentorship of On Second Thought producer Sean Powers. Vox will hold a series of events about teen dating violence in Atlanta this weekend. Visit On Second Thought at gpbnews.org for more information. Sunday is Mother's Day. It can be a tough time for new moms whose babies are in the neonatal intensive care unit, or NICU. My little guy started off in one of those. Children in the NICU are either too small or too sick to go home. And research shows that physical touch can help with healing. Human contact is also very important for newborns in their early development. But some parents are unable to stay in the hospital to give their newborns the constant affection that they need. A program at Children's Healthcare of Atlanta at Eggleston called Baby Buddies welcomes volunteers to hold and rock babies. Producer Linda Chen followed one such volunteer during a shift and brings us this audio postcard.
First thing you want to do is wash your hands really good. My name is Diane Seville, and I volunteer as a baby buddy at Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. Have any babies that need to be held? I'm a mom of three boys, and my middle son was born with Down syndrome and heart problems. So the day after he was born, they had to take him over to Children's, and I was still in the hospital for like the next 4 days going, who's going to rock my baby? Who's going to hold him? You know, I really want to be there to do it, but I can't.
This is Taylor.
Taylor.
Yeah. How do you want it?
Little known to me, my mother-in-law had come over a couple of times during the week to hold David and feed him and love on him and rock him. And that just made me so happy because I couldn't be there. So she was my arms, you know, and fast forward till I'm an empty nester. And I saw on TV this feature story of an elderly couple rocking babies. And I went, oh, I can do this. I want to do that. And I want to do that at Children's.
All right.
You know, I think about how I felt when I wasn't able to be there with David. The parents may not be crying when they come in and see their baby or, you know, hold their baby, but you know inside their heart's breaking because they don't want to be in NICU. They want to be at home with a normal baby with no health problems. But that's the way it is, and so they're very brave, and the fact that someone has held my baby made me feel good when I couldn't do it, and so I'm hoping that's the same for them.
There we go. Here we go.
Just holding them and loving them and soothing them if they're crying, or sometimes if I'm by myself, I'll sing.
Jesus loves you, this I know, for the Bible tells me so.
I think being a baby buddy is one of the most rewarding things I've ever done. And if anyone asked me, I would say definitely you want to do this. If you love babies and you love holding them, and you really want to minister to them and to the parents and the nurses, too. I feel like they are, too. Be a baby buddy. It is so much fun. And you feel like you're really making a difference in somebody's life.
It's all right. You're doing great. Yes, you are.
More information about the Baby Buddies program and other volunteer opportunities at Children's Healthcare of Atlanta can be found at gpbnews.org. It's been a long week. Atlanta rapper Killer Mike was on the show talking about his unwavering support of Bernie Sanders, and I wondered when Killer Mike was going to run for something. We met one of Georgia's first black police officers, and we took the pulse of Georgia's farm industry with the state's agriculture commissioner. So, as we do every Friday, we've gathered a group of smart people to help us kick back, unwind, and think back on the week's news. It's time for the break room.
Will your vice presidential choice definitely be a Republican?
Yes, that's true.
Will it be an elected official?
Most likely.
Starbucks is getting sued.
For?
For putting too much ice in the beverages.
Symbolically, it's one of the biggest announcements in the modern era of animal welfare.
And we are celebrating spring and all things in bloom with a different type of break room today. With me are four Georgians who work in the farming industry. Andrew Thompson is a hog farmer on the line from the town of Dixie down near the Florida border. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning.
Glad to have you. Haleen Green grows fruits and vegetables in Atlanta that are native to the Caribbean. Haleen, I am told that you have a nickname. What do you go by?
Haleen Green, the Garden Queen.
We'll see if you earn that. Well done. Whit Whitmire lives in Atlanta and sells beef from his family's North Carolina cattle farm. Just to be clear, Whit, you do not consider yourself a farmer or a rancher. Why?
I do not. My dad is up there putting in the hard work every day with the farm hands, and I paid my dues growing up, hopefully one day again soon. But for now, I'm here in Atlanta slinging beef, as we say.
Yeah, but I mean, I've met like, you know, fancy executives in the ag industry who, you know, wear really expensive suits and cowboy boots, and they'll tell you that they'll describe themselves as a farmer or a rancher, even though it's clear that they've never shoved manure in their life.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of farming friends that are farmers, and out of respect for them and what they do every day and that hard work, you know, I it's kind of like calling someone that's not necessarily a chef, you know, you kind of, it's a lot of work and you gotta have to pay your respect. So I call people that do it every day and really truly right. make their living off that hard work a farmer. So at this point in time, I don't have the honor of calling myself a farmer, I don't think.
Whit Whitmire, keeping it real. Matthew Rayford is with us from Brunswick. He is an organic farmer who grows red peas, okra, onions, and watermelons. Matthew, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you for having me.
Your produce sounds delicious. Our first headline today is about work.
Work, 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 work. It's to me, I'll be work, 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 work. You see me do me
Now, I know for most farmers, the work really never stops, but listen to this story. The small town of Grantville in Coweta County recently put all city employees on a four-day work schedule. The city manager says that it is an incentive for workers to receive few benefits and no longer have access to a retirement plan. It's just a way to please them and attract high-quality talent to the city payroll. Would a four-day work week be an incentive for you guys? As we said, people who are on the farm tend to work 24/7, right?
Correct.
Yeah, I can't even really, I mean, I'm not even on the farm, but the work I've got to do doesn't really ever stop. And, you know, sure as heck, my dad's not stopping anytime soon. So I can't imagine that. But if you live in a world where that's possible, then that's awesome.
Haleen, would you like a four-day work week, or do you like the constant work lifestyle?
Being a farmer, it's a seven-day work week.
I bet.
But who benefits from a four-day work week when after working how many hours for 4 days, you end up with no incentives for the rest of your life?
Indeed.
Just work, work. I don't think that's cool.
Yeah, but what's the retirement plan for farmers?
There's none.
None.
There's none.
Yeah.
Keep on growing.
Yep.
I'm sorry that I started this out on a depressing note there, guys, but we're all grateful for the fruits of your labor, and I mean that literally.
Yes.
Well, one thing you got to think about, too, with these city governments, they've got equipment just like farmers. May not be as expensive as ours, but you know, a lot of the tractors and equipment we have cost $200,000-$300,000.
Yeah.
And a lot of times during the year, you don't have but 1 month or 2 months that you're running that piece of equipment. So if you consider a 40-hour week that piece of equipment is only running for 40 hours that week, you're going to have to buy several of them, two or three, just to make it through during the daylight hours. And that's the reason we don't go by no 40-hour week. And with the city needing to go to a 10-hour week for a 10-hour day for his employees, those employees are staying out there and staying on those equipment longer, and then they've got somebody else that's, you know, rotating in, you know, possibly 6 to 7 days, you know, depending on what kind of work they got to have done in the city.
It's a really good point. On the other hand, I suppose they talk about the costs of running the office, having it heated and lighted and lit, I should say, and air-conditioned, and that sometimes they think that they can save some money on those costs if they just go to a four-day work week. Plus, there's also everybody saving costs in commutes. If you do 8 commutes a week instead of 10 commutes a week, maybe there's some money and some sanity that can be saved there, but to each their own. We're having coffee and conversation in the break room, as we do each Friday. And it's a very special morning. 4 people from the ag industry are our guests in the break room today. We've got Andrew Thompson of Dixie, Matthew Rayford of Brunswick, Whit Whitmore of Atlanta, and Haleen Green of Atlanta. And we want to thank Savannah Coffee Roasters for donating the coffee that is fueling our break room guests this morning. They are online at savannahcoffee.com. And we have plenty of coffee to go around, but we do not have a fancy barista to make us drinks for us like they do at Starbucks.
I'll take a mocha.
And I'll have a vanilla, one of the vanilla bullshit things, you know, you whatever you want, some vanilla bullshit latte, kappa thing, you know, whatever you got, I don't care.
Starbucks is in hot water right now over a lawsuit, actually. Company is being sued for putting too much ice into their drinks. The lawsuit contends that some 24-ounce size cups have as little as 14 ounces as whatever that vanilla BS is, and the rest is just ice. So, guys, let's talk about whether or not we're getting our money's worth with Starbucks. I mean, Haleen, I suppose that when you're selling your produce, you can't really cut your product, can you?
No, I don't. With Starbucks, I don't know if I would go as far as a suit because, see, I am very outspoken. And when I'm ordering, if I do order coffee, I would say, no ice, please. Then I would ask for a second cup with ice and have my full cup of coffee poured on ice. So I would get my benefits right then and there. I always get my money's worth.
That is the way you do it. That is the way. That's
Haleen
how
Green,
a pro
the garden
does it.
Queen.
Yes, right. I'm Haleen Green, the garden queen.
Whit, do you ever go to Starbucks?
I absolutely do not. I like to support a lot of our local coffee shops here and hang out and do my work there. I'm kind of a coffee shop nomad. I think it's ridiculous that they're going to a suit, but you know what? I understand their anger because that's like opening up a bag of potato chips to a whole darn bag full of air. You know, there's nothing more irritating. So too much ice and not enough coffee, you know, when I'm trying to get that caffeine in the morning, you know, that's no good. So
okay. Let's talk about something a little more serious. A new Pew survey finds that the ideological gap between highly educated Americans and less educated Americans is growing. If you have been to graduate school, you are now twice as likely to hold consistently liberal views as opposed to consistently conservative views. And that invites, to me, the obvious question, does knowledge support a liberal worldview, or is it just that universities simply indoctrinate a liberal worldview? Then we've got a recent article in The Atlantic looking at the assumption that most college campuses lean left. We've got 2 scholars who recently set out to investigate kind of a more nuanced question. What is life like for the minority of college professors who are cultural or political conservatives? Andrew Thompson, well, first of all, what's the is there any truth to the stereotype that farmers are conservative?
Well, you know, I didn't go to college. As soon as I got out of high school, or even when I was in high school, I left at lunchtime, went to the farm and worked. It was kind of hard for me to give in to my wife to let our kids go to college, and which I'm glad they did. But, you know, one thing that stuck in my mind when I read this article was that, you know, my son's in college now, which he lives at home. He drives back and forth, but at nighttime when he comes in, you know, we got a great relationship, a good Christian family, and he tells both my wife and I, you know, what his college professors are saying and what their views are. But yet, with that, that's fine. Let him do it, you know.
Yeah.
But we get to tell him, and he knows the way we've raised him, and we get to tell him our side of the story. So, you know, that makes it, we can counter that, what I say is crap that the professors are trying to teach him in the school.
Matthew Rayford, organic farmer in Brunswick, how does that compare with your experience?
You know, I straight out of high school, I went in the military. So by the time I even stepped on a college campus, I was way past being an adult, and I was already, you know, I'd already been to a war. So I had a different perspective when I walked into college. I think one of the things that needs to ensure to happen is that people learn how to work. Farming's work. And I think that when people learn how to work, their worldview looks a little bit different when they understand what it actually takes to, you know, do things like produce food and produce a product of any sort. And then as they start to have to, you know, learn or become more educated, they start to understand that things are not as easy as people tend to say that it could be.
Right. Hey, Lean or Wit, how did college and or farming shape your worldview?
Well, I'm one of the lucky ones. I had businesses and went to nursing school and nursed and helped people way before I went to Georgia State University at 62. And so when I went to Georgia State University, all the younger students thought I was the professor. And all I talk about was farming. Going to Georgia State at 62, you don't have to pay. It's called GSU 62. And I enjoyed going to college. I took everything there was to offer, 5 solid years at the university, and then I became tired and I went right back into my farming. So I don't have the same views as all the others of today. Mm-hmm. I love to work and I love farming.
Well, let's stay in politics for our next topic. Ted Cruz may have bowed out of the presidential race this week, but people are still talking about something that happened during one of his campaign stops. A little boy heckled Cruz during a rally, yelling, "You suck." And this is how Cruz responded.
You know, in my household, when a child behaves that way, they get a spanking.
Now, ironically, this happened just days after a big new meta-analysis landed in the Journal of Family Psychology confirming that spanking is counterproductive. Evidence says so. It leads to increased aggression, increased antisocial behavior, mental health and cognitive problems. The long and short of it is it essentially has the opposite effect that parents often believe it will have. So what do we think, guys? Was Cruz promoting abuse, or was he just putting a bratty kid in his place? Whit, why don't you start?
Well, you know, I guess that still stands to be determined, the effectiveness or how much it really screws up, so to speak, anyone. But I think he's probably just was pandering to the, you know, demographic and crowd and his constituents, if you will, and trying to say something that they wanted to hear. So I don't think, you know, spanking children, whether, you know, that's a parent's own decision, I guess, ultimately. And I'm 26 and I don't have kids coming anytime soon. So it's not something that I'm too terribly worried about at the moment. To each their own, I guess.
Andrew Thompson, if you hear a politician advancing spanking, is that a plus or a minus in your book?
That's a plus. You know, I was growing up, I've got a lot of spankings, which what was so great back then was my father never hit me right then. He said, "Okay, son, this is what you did wrong. Tonight after supper, you're going to get a spanking." And you know, he came to me and sat down on the bed with me and said, "All right, do you know what you did wrong?" And then he spanked me. He never spanked me out of anger at that moment. And I use that, you know, with my kids. I'm 52 years old, and I've whooped my kids, not as many times as I got it. But to this day, my kids will tell anybody, do they respect me? And boy, I respect my mother and father. And the main reason I respect them was because they kept me straight and they spanked me. You know, and even teachers back years ago, you learn respect. Now, yeah. You see a kid walking in a grocery store and a parent and a kid does something and the parent slaps him right then. No, that's wrong. You don't never hit somebody out of anger. You can do it later.
Hey, Lean, do you have kids? Have you had to deal with this question for yourself?
5 children and Ooh. 6 grandchildren.
Ho!
When I was growing up, I'm taking the praise. I did not give a lot of trouble because I hate spanking. I think the little boy was just repeating something that adults said around him, and it was just a repeat. But for my children, they got very little spanking because I have a big eye and a twisted mouth. And I think they felt spanked when I took a look at them and twisted my mouth like my mom used to do to me. And I stared, and trust me, they knew what that meant.
If it works, it works.
Yes.
We are in the break room right now talking about the week's news with four folks from the ag industry in Georgia, Andrew Thompson, Matt Rayford, Haleen Green, and Whit Whitmire. Let's move on to our next topic. Tax day is thankfully behind us, or it is now once again ahead of us, depending on how you look at it. The IRS, of course, does not always get the warmest response.
Tax man!
Tax man!
Tax man!
Now, this thing called the Republican Study Committee, which includes members of Congress, called recently for the complete elimination of the IRS. Folks, would we like to see the IRS go away? How then would we collect the money that we need to pay for schools and roads and, I don't know, farm subsidies? Matt Rayford, what do you think?
Well, I mean, after reading the article, it didn't say they were going to stop taking taxes. They just said
yeah,
they
but you need an agency to collect the taxes, right?
Right. So they still are going to use the Treasury to do that. So it's not like they really got – they're just getting rid of one entity that they're paying a lot of money to do all of that. So from what I'm seeing, it's not like they're getting rid of taxes. They say get rid of the IRS. They never said – because how are they going to pay their salary?
Right. Indeed. Andrew Thompson is
– they get paid through taxes. So they're just – all they're really trying to do is whitewashing. They're just trying to say, let's get rid of this, and getting people kind of riled, thinking that it's not going to change taxes. That nowhere in this article they said they were going to drop taxes, make taxes fairer, cut subsidies. They didn't say any of that in there. So I just think
so Indeed. So the gentleman from Brunswick thinks that this is just pandering, just a symbolic move. Andrew Thompson, have you had any run-ins with the IRS? Is it an institution that is beyond saving?
Yes, we've been audited a few years back, and you know, I'm wondering if more is the problem is if it's the employees, because you know, me looking at government agencies and speaking with some of them or seeing a little bit of it, and I'm no expert, but you know, as a farmer, you hire somebody, if they're not doing a job, you can fire them pretty easy. You know, so
yeah,
are some of these government officials, employees, do they know how hard, they do know how hard it is to get fired, so they get their little cushion job and they slack off. Is that our problem?
Perfectly fair question. Let's do one more political topic. Now that Donald Trump is the apparent Republican nominee in the presidential race, the question now becomes who will become his running mate. One person who has not shied away from potentially wanting the job is former Georgia Congressman and Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich. He told the New York Times, quote, "If a potential president says, 'I need you,' it would be very hard for a patriotic citizen to say no." I wonder if that calculus would hold true for Gingrich if it was Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton asking him to be VP. But Whitmire, what would a Trump-Gingrich ticket look like to you?
Oh, Lord. I mean, my personal opinion that some may not agree with is that, I mean, I'm not going to be voting for him. But, you know, I think it's all about, you know, the best fight and, you know, having as many parties. I wish that there was more third-party representation. No one keep you know, talking about Gary Johnson or libertarians, you know, maybe kind of a dream in the clouds, but, you know, I'm not going to be voting for a Newt Gingrich, Donald Trump ticket, but those are my personal opinions, and everyone, you know, is entitled to their own, and I appreciate them all, so.
Is there anyone in the break room right now who would go Trump Gingrich?
Not I.
That's a deafening silence. Okay, let's end on something a little bit lighter. I know that you guys all grow or sell food. Would you consider yourselves foodies? Okay, it's a weighted term, and clearly we're not super comfortable with it, but there is a huge gap between what foodies talk about in person and online and what Americans actually eat. Allrecipes.com is the most popular English-language food website in the world, and thanks to its excellent search engine optimization, the site's recipes constantly appear at the top of Google search results for food. But as was discussed in a recent Slate article, the actual dishes tend to be quite amateur and not necessarily the most appealing. Guys, where do you get the recipes for all the wonderful things that you raise or rear? Haleen?
Well, I am unique. I was born in Jamaica. And so I am taking my foodie from an island style. Everyone enjoys the foods that I prepare and my family prepare. And so therefore, we are called Jamaican foodies.
Matthew Rayford, are you as good in the kitchen as you are out in the farm?
Well, funny you say that. I actually own the restaurant in Brunswick called The Farmer and the Larder. I was a chef first. I consider myself to be a chef farmer. So I've been cooking since I've probably been in the kitchen since I was 9. So about almost 40 years now, I've been inside of a kitchen. So. And then I was raised cooking on the farm with my great-grandmother and my grandmother, my mom and my dad. So it's always, we've always been around food. So,
yeah.
You know, for me, I mean, I do research just like anybody else when it comes to cooking from time to time if I find something new that I want to do. So, yeah, I mean, I'm always in the kitchen cooking. So, I mean, as a matter of fact, I'm in the restaurant right now having this conversation.
Awesome. All right. Andrew Thompson, last word goes to you. What do you like to do with the hogs that you farm?
Well, now we slaughter here on the farm and process, so we have an endless supply of pork. My wife cooks for our employees. We have about 18 employees, so she cooks 3 days a week for them. And talking about recipe books, you know, her best ones, one is a Georgia Farm Bureau cookbook, and
okay.
She got two or three church cookbooks. You know, these were compiled from people that wasn't getting paid for it. It was just old recipes that they grew up with. And there's some great recipes in there.
Yeah, that old school oral tradition beats anything you find on the internet any day. We're out of time for the break room. Thanks to our All Ag Industry panel, Andrew Thompson of Dixie, Matthew Rayford of Brunswick, Whit Whitmire of Atlanta, and Haleen Green, also of Atlanta. Have yourself a great weekend, guys. Try to get some rest.
Thank you.
You too.
You too.
And that's it for today's show. We want to hear from you. Let's ask you, do you want to see Donald Trump's running mate be Newt Gingrich or somebody else? And if you're in the never Trump camp, is there a VP pick that could change your mind? Tweet us at OST Talk or call 404-594-57 and we might use your comments on the air. That's it for On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Adam Ragusa. Celeste Headley is back at you on Monday. Have yourself a great weekend.